Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. This Heritage Radio Network program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Every week on Hot Grease, we bring people back to what's great in food. Culinary traditions, cooking at home, knowing your farmer, or even growing your own food. With my Below the Mason-Dixon charm, I spotlight the culture of the food movement. From chefs to tastemakers to moms on a budget. Today, we'll be talking food headlines. And we're kicking off month-long ice cream talking here on Hot Grease. If you're listening live, we have a call-in number. We haven't had any call-ins in a long time. So if you feel the urge, give us a buzz. Our number here in the studio is 718-497-2128. Again, 718-497-2128. Food headlines. Hands down, I'm going to say the most talked about food headline of last week. Without a doubt. It's from the Observer.com, written by Mr. Eddie Hung, and it's titled Marcus Samuelson's Overcooked Memoir Makes His Pricey Harlem Discomfort Food Hard to Swallow. The Chicken Come Home to Red Roost. Okay, so this article came out on the 25th, and I got emails about it. I got Facebook messages about it. In a nutshell, I'll give you the overview. Mr. Eddie Hung, I mean, for some of you guys, if you've been in the food world or you're a food culture fanatic, you may know him as a blogger, food aficionado. He's now writing for The Observer, and he basically did a review of Mr. Samuelson's new book that actually, I think it came out either last week or this week, called Yes, Chef. And it's a memoir about his life, and it's published by Random House. So he not only picks apart the book, but he picks apart Marcus Samuelson's restaurant in Harlem. More so, not the actual food, but does he really belong in Harlem and how people feel about Red Rooster in Harlem? I have not read the book yet. I'm very curious to read the book. I'm going on vacation next week, so I'm definitely going to pick it up and read it. I will say that I have dined at Red Roosters and had drinks at Red Rooster probably about 5 times or more. I went on Christmas Day. I went to an event prior to the opening, and I have friends who live up there, and I've gone there for drinks and another event. I absolutely love the space. I don't know if I really even talked about Red Rooster here on the show. I think the space is absolutely gorgeous. The artwork is gorgeous. When you walk in, you definitely feel like you're downtown. One of the big things that Eddie said in his article is that, and I'm summarizing here, that Red Rooster is not possibly welcoming to Harlemites. And I think one of the reasons why he brought that up is because the reservation list is crazy. I think they said, don't quote me on this, it's like 30 to 60 days or more to get a reservation at Red Roosters. And if you live in Harlem, that may be a little difficult. I will say all of my out-of-town friends that come in town, they're dying to go to Red Rooster. and they always say, I'm going uptown to go to Red Rooster. So definitely I know that a lot of tourists and people who follow what's going on in New York food scene go to Red Rooster. So my opinion about the book, I don't have an opinion about the book because I haven't read it yet. My opinion about Marcus Samuelson, I have the utmost respect for him and the work that he's doing. How I feel about if he has a right to have a restaurant in Harlem. Of course he does. Do I feel like that there are some things that he probably needs to improve upon to answer the critics or to shut the critics up? Probably. But at the end of the day, he's a businessman and he's running a restaurant, and some people will like what he's doing and some people will disapprove of it. So I'm going to hold my opinions until after I read the book, because it's not fair for me to not have the complete snippets and not read the book, because the article really was about the book and the restaurant. I've been to the restaurant, but I don't know Marcus's complete story in book form. So I'm going to wait until then. So anyway, that is the food headline that I think the hottest food headline of last week. If you have any opinions about the book or Red Rooster, or if you've read Yes Chef already, let me know. I'm going to try to get Eddie on the show. I think it'd be super cool to get him on the show and we can talk about it here. Yeah. So there you have it, food headlines. We're going to take a quick break, y'all. I've been talking about this for almost 2 months now. Today we are kicking off. Today is July 2nd, and we are kicking off a month-long series all about ice cream. We're going to take a short break, but keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. If you're just tuning in live, we're celebrating. We're kicking off Ice Cream Month on Hot Grease. And on the phone today, we have the authors and founders of Sweet Cream and Sugar Cones, 90 recipes for making your own ice cream and frozen treats from Byright Creamery, Ann Walker and Chris Hogerhide. Welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, thank you.
So, I love the book. I have a ton of ice cream books, but I will say you guys have gone on my shelf as like one of the Bibles of ice cream making.
Ooh.
Yes.
Hey, thank you.
So, Anne, I have to ask you this, equipment. I remember last year when ice cream season started, some people were passing around a lot of recipes or really articles about you don't need an ice cream maker to make ice cream. But in you guys' new cookbook / food book, you give us a whole like primer in the beginning of what equipment you need to make great ice cream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, you're definitely our belief is that using an ice cream machine is going to give you much creamier or smoother ice cream. There are people who put your ice cream base in a freezer and stir it intermittently, but you're just not going to get that same smooth consistency. But there's a lot of great inexpensive ice cream machines available that are you know, really affordable and easy to use.
So your suggestion, Anne, is that people can pick up an ice cream. Yeah, I think I saw an ice cream maker for like $80 or less.
Oh, they're cheaper than that. The Cuisinart makes a really popular ice cream machine. KitchenAid has one. They're both really affordable. And then, of course, you can spend more. You know, you can get fancier from there. But I don't think it's a piece of equipment that is unaffordable.
And on the same line, Anne, of equipment, I see you guys list on here pop molds, and that you only see that in some of the newer cookbooks about ice cream. You don't see that a lot, telling folks you need pop molds. Where can you find those? What's the easiest place to find pop molds?
You know, I see them in the grocery store this time of year. I see them everywhere. I saw, we're here in San Francisco, just up the street. We have a really great hardware store. They have those on display there. I think that they're pretty readily accessible.
Chris, so we have the equipment. We're ready to get down to making ice cream at home. Mm-hmm. Some folks are probably wondering, do I use whole milk? Do I use cream? And the question I'm posing to you today is, does it really matter what type of heavy cream you use for your base?
Yes, it does. You want to use an organic cream. You know, it just has like a cleaner flavor, and it's better for you. You don't want to use all cream. You want to cut it with whole milk. So that way you're not, like, coating your mouth with all the fat. You actually will be able to taste the flavors. If you use all the cream, it would just be too creamy. Not too fatty.
So what other like, must-have ingredients or top-quality things that you should have when you're starting your base of ice cream?
You definitely want good-quality eggs as well. I think using vanilla beans, if you're going to make it a vanilla ice cream, really enhances the vanilla. Instead of just using an extract, you're going to get much more flavor out of a fresh bean. Just like really good quality seasonal ingredients. Like you don't want to make strawberry ice cream in the middle of winter when the strawberries don't taste like anything. You know, you want to, when you're at the farmer's market and you're seeing fruit that looks the best, that's when you want to use it to make ice cream.
Totally. So I'm browsing through the first part of the book that talks about techniques, and I love the photos so folks can actually see step one, step two, step three in making some of the fillings for the ice cream. I feel like as a person who loves ice cream making at home, there are some basic things that you should not do. What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes for ice cream makers, people that are making ice cream at home?
Biggest mistakes? That's a really good question. I would say, people are definitely the most intimidated by making the base, by cooking the egg yolks on the stove and making sure that it's the right consistency. I think that sometimes if you overcook your base, it'll break. It kind of looks like, you know, the egg separates from the cream. One of the best things to, like, little tricks to have in your back pocket is if that happens, you can use a burr mixer or even a blender and bring that back together. You can put your base in the, you know, you can just blend it up and it'll come back. I think the biggest mistake is people just get too intimidated. They never even start trying, you know, and it's one of those things. Once you get that basic technique down, that's when you can start to really have a lot of fun.
And speaking of basics, I think that everyone, if you're starting off, don't get too fancy. I think sticking you agree, huh? Sticking with the great vanilla ice cream is the best because you can always put that on pies or any kind of other sweet desserts. I heard one of you guys mention a minute ago about quality vanilla and vanilla beans. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about the classics and starting with just basic vanilla ice cream.
The classics are classic for a reason. The other day I was serving a guest and he got a scoop of vanilla and a scoop of chocolate. And when I was like, that looks so good. And I served some to myself afterwards. I was like, this, you know, vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry, man, those three flavors together are so perfect. And, you know, the thing about ice cream is it's all about, you know, very few ingredients. It's very, very simple, you know. It's eggs, sugar, cream, and milk, and whatever flavor you're using. So, obviously, the ingredients that you use are of utmost importance because that's what's going to shine through.
Totally, totally. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about the birth of the Byrite Creamery and get into the cookbook a little bit more. Listeners, if you're listening live, stick with us. We'll be right back with the Byrite Creamery.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I can't dream of nobody else but you. But you. If you play me like a fool.
Big news in sustainable seafood at Whole Foods Market. On April 22nd, Earth Day 2012, we'll be eliminating all red-rated species of wild-caught fish and seafood from our stores across the country. It's our way of supporting our oceans and helping to reverse trends in overfishing. Learn more at blueoceaninstitute.org and wholefoodsmarket.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Check out our program schedule and show archives on heritageradionetwork.org. Today, we are kicking off our Ice Cream Month episodes here on Hot Grease, and we're chatting with the folks behind Sweet Cream and Sugar Cones, 90 recipes for making your own ice cream and frozen treats from Byrite Creamery. So, some folks are listening, and they're like, Byrite Creamery, what's that? I've been there. I've been there before. I love, absolutely love Sam and all the folks at Byrite and the Byrite family. Just give us a brief, you know, one-on-one about the Byrite story and the Byrite family and community of stores.
Which one of us do you want
to I love you guys both so much.
Sam's
and
married to Sam, so she should tell the story.
So, yeah, and give us the one-on-one how it all, you woke up one day and Sam was like, hey, let's make this happen. Well, actually, it was his father's store, right?
I can give you I'll give you the quick story on, well, Byrite Creamery, how that came about was Chris and I have been pastry chefs for a number of years, working in a few different restaurants, and then Sam came to us and said, why don't you start baking goods for the market, because, you know, it would be fantastic for us to have our own line of cookies and cakes and pies. And so Chris and I started renting a kitchen, baking all of our items, a whole line of items, and then packaging them, putting them in our car, driving them across town, and putting them on the shelf. So after we had done that for a couple of years, that started to, we just realized we really wanted to be on the same street as the market so we could just be carting this stuff across the street. So luckily we did find a spot. We found a spot that we could build out a kitchen and start baking, but we also had the opportunity to use a retail space. And we thought, well, what does the community need? What would be perfect? And we decided that ice cream would be just a great addition to the neighborhood. And so we opened the doors, you know, over 5 years ago, and we had, you know, we just got a great reception from the community. It was really exciting.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys are actually located in the Mission neighborhood, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, we're on 18th Street between Dolores and Guerrero. We're almost just right across the street from Dolores Park.
Exactly. So I want to get into some of the savory and wild flavors that are listed in the. I love ice cream. I've had, you know, sweet corn ice cream. And you guys have a chapter. What's the chapter called? That kind of, I see a basil ice cream. Would you consider that a wild flavor? Do people come in and they're like, basil ice cream?
Not too crazy. I mean, I think it's one of the more unusual ones that we have, but what's so fantastic is how excited everybody gets after they taste it. We're not the wackiest ice cream makers around, but we always try to kind of have a twist on a classic or you know, have it grounded in something.
One of the ones that I love that some people who are just, you know, the kind of the vanilla chocolate strawberry folks is, folks don't realize how great olive oil and ice cream is. You have a great mandarin orange and olive oil ice cream. How did you, where did that come from? I know that Buyrite Market sells some of the best olive oils in the country. Did you like look on the shelf at Buyrite and was like, let's make a great ice cream?
It's like going into the candy shop, because we can go over there and pick stuff off the shelves and you're right, be using some of the best stuff available. Sam came up with the Sam Sundae, and the Sam Sundae is dark chocolate ice cream with a bergamot olive oil drizzled on top. A sprinkle of Malden sea salt and some whipped cream, and that's an incredibly popular sundae. So that was kind of the beginning of the olive oil and ice cream combination. And then Chris and I started playing around with making olive oil ice creams. We'd served them at a couple different events, and you know, it just goes so beautifully together. I mean, when you add olive oil to ice cream, it just gives it such a luxurious mouthfeel. And the great thing is then you can be using different flavored oils, or you know, adding an additional flavor to enhance it. So it's a really fun vehicle to play around with.
So, and Chris, as I've said before, July, every episode of Hot Grease is going to be dedicated to ice cream, and I'm asking everyone the same question. So this question is for both of you guys. What are some of your first fondest memories of ice cream during the summer months? And where are you from? Where did you grow up, and where did you have ice cream?
Well, this is Chris. I'm from Michigan originally, and I have two fond memories of ice cream. One is on my birthday, my grandfather would take me to Farrell's, which is a huge ice cream parlor in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And it was a fun parlor. Like, this was a classic ice cream parlor. And I always, at any birthday, he would take me there, which was fun. And then summers in Michigan, it's all about the soft serve. Mm. You know, around the lakes, you always go up and you get a soft serve dipped in chocolate. Mm. And that I love.
Yeah. This is Anne. I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia. I would say that we used to have, growing up, we shared kind of a backyard with our next door neighbors. There were no fences back there. And every 4th of July, there were about six different neighbors that would all kind of convene in our backyard, and we would have our 4th of July celebration. And one neighbor would always bring over their White Mountain ice cream maker, and every 4th of July, they would make peach ice cream. And that was the first time I ever saw anybody making ice cream, and that always really stuck in my memory, and I always thought that was a really special one.
Wow. I love it. I love it. So, ladies, happy 4th of July to you guys.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the book. Next time I come to San Francisco, which will probably be next spring, I'm going to have to, without a doubt, stop by the store. But thank you for kicking off Ice Cream Month here on Hot Grease, and congrats on the book.
Thank you so much, Nicole.
Listeners, we'll be back in a sec with more Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Hot Grease is produced by myself and engineered by Joe G. This program is being sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. All right, folks, so I'm just going to take the last few seconds to give you guys my fondest ice cream memories. First off, I have to say that my husband and some of my friends really, really pick at me a lot because I tend to spend a lot of money on ice cream. Not that I buy a lot of ice cream, but I think I've talked about this here before. If you are a loyal listener to Hot Grease, I buy the good stuff. So I spend about $10 for a little small pint of ice cream. But that is not my fondest memory, because, you know, my folks in Athens probably would die if they heard that I'm spending $10 on ice cream. I will have to say that I remember, I know this is cheesy, but Dairy Queen, growing up after church on a Sunday, getting a peanut butter parfait from, I think that's what it's called. It had peanuts, chocolate, and it was ice cream, and whipped cream from Dairy Queen. That is like the fondest ice cream memory that I have. So when I think about ice cream, that is the first thing that comes to mind. And I remember them being like really expensive to get a parfait. And I was a young kid, and most kids wanted just an ice cream cone like dipped in chocolate. But no, I wanted the parfait. So that is probably one of my earliest, fondest memories. Some of the other things that I definitely remember is like the hand crank or whatever you want to call it, the hand ice cream maker. I remember seeing those, but I can't like remember any exact event or being at someone's house. But I remember the rock salt and people putting in there and making the ice cream like that. What are some of my other fondest ice cream memories? Definitely making the homemade Kool-Aid pops. Oh my gosh. You make some Kool-Aid, you put them in the molds, and then you just stick a little thing inside of it and you have a popsicle. That was like the old school way of making pops. And now we have folks like Hip Pops and People Pops and La New Yorkina. But yeah, that was the first one. And lastly, ice cream socials. I totally remember in grade school, like being rewarded for, you know, perfect attendance or, you know, making a superior rating in band or some kind of competition. I remember the prize always being like a pizza party or ice cream party. I can barely remember the pizza parties, but my gosh, the ice cream parties was a big, big deal. And even my first job out of college, I worked for the American Cancer Society, and we used to have ice cream socials during the summer months for the employees to kind of kick back. So, yeah, a good old-fashioned ice cream social is definitely always on the top of my mind. So yeah, guys, there it is. My fondest ice cream memories. I'm so excited about this month. Next week, I won't have a show, but I think you're going to get a pre-recorded show from someone. But four shows all about ice cream from people from San Francisco, like we heard today, from New York City, restaurateurs to ice cream makers and just folks who are making ice cream at home. So listen the entire month. Happy 4th of July to everyone. And thank you for always tuning in and supporting Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can join me here every Monday live at heritageradionetwork.org or check me out via iTunes. But until then, always take the road less traveled.
Sometimes I'm right, and I can be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The preacher, the banker, the drummer, and then makes no difference what group I'm in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our programs archived on our website or by searching iTunes for Heritage Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website. Thanks for listening.